Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur halfway down Daf Samach Vov Omid Aleph. You'll notice there is a Mishnah, and this Mishnah actually is rather long. It continues down to practically the end of the Omid. The topic heading that we've assigned to this section on the side of the Gemara, Vidui V'Shiluach Soyer HaMishleach, the confession that is recited by the Kohen Gadol, and the sending out of the goat that is sent on Yom Kippur to a cliff, and it carries with it the sins of Israel. The Rashi points out that this Mishnah is a return to the Seder HaVoida, the order of activities that were done in the Beis HaMikdash. There was an interruption in that flow of Mishnayos, so we're picking up where that was left off, and we had mentioned earlier in the Masichta that they brought the Kohen to the Soreh Mishtalech, where the animal had been standing, and the Lashon of the Gemara there had been Keneged Beis Shilucho. But that was quite a while ago, so we're picking up from that point over here. Bo Lo Eitzel Soreh Mishtalech. We're at the Mishnah in the middle of the Omid. The Kohen comes to the goat that was prearranged position. V'somech Shtei Yodav Olav, and the Kohen Gadol places his hands on its head. Umisvade, and he mentions a confession. V'kach hoya omer, and thusly was the confessional. Ono Hashem, a plea to the Almighty. Chotu avu poshu lefanecho amcho beis Yisrael. The Jewish people have sinned different types of sins. Ono Hashem, kaper no lachatoim v'lavonis v'lapshoim. Please, Almighty, forgive the sins of Israel, shechotu v'sheavu v'sheposhu l'fanecha, that had sinned in front of you, amcho beis Israel, the nation of Israel, kakosu b'soros Moshe avdecho leimor, as it says in the Torah, ki b'yom hazeh yichaper aleichem, l'tayer eschem, on this day, namely Yom Kippur, the Almighty will atone for us, will forgive us, l'tayer eschem, to purify us, mikol chato yisechem, l'fnei Hashem titor, from all of the sins that have been committed in the presence of the Almighty. And the Kohanim and the rest of the people that were in the Beis HaMikdash courtyard, when they would hear the ineffable name of the Almighty, as he would enunciate it, they would bow and prostrate themselves on the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, the Omrim, and they would proclaim, Boruch Hashem Kevoid Malchuso Leolam Vaed, praised be the kingdom and the name of the Almighty forever. Mosru Lemisha Hayamolicho, then the Mosro, the Soreh HaMishtalech, the goat, the scapegoat, was given over to the one who would carry, who would Molicho, to walk it, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, outside Yerushalayim, to its destination at the cliff east of Jerusalem. Hakol Ksher Molicho, everyone was eligible for this task, namely by letter of the law. It didn't have to be a Kohen, but anyone would have been suitable. Elo She'osu HaKohenim Gedolim She'osu HaKohenim Gedolim Keva, the Kohanim Gedolim had established for themselves a practice, v'lo hoyu manichim es Yisrael olicho, and they did not allow a non-Kohanim to walk it out, to accompany this goat out to its destination. Omer Rabbi Yossi, Maisiv olicho Arsalav Yisrael hoya, there was an incident where a gentleman by the name of Arsalav, who was a non-Kohen, who did this, carried, walked it out. V'kevesh osulo, and there was a ramp, an elevation that they that was made that would enable him to leave the courtyard and outside the ear, outside the city, and through this elevated ramp, the people, the assembly, assembled people wouldn't have any contact with the goat. Why was this necessary? Because the Babylonians, and this will be discussed later, who this really is a reference to, but this is a description of a negative practice. That they used to tear out the hairs, they would tear out the hairs of the goat, the omrim lo, and demand, tol vitzei, take it and go, take it and go. They were very impatient, if you will, with any delay. So they would, this is what they used to do, and in order to avoid that situation, this kevesh, this ramp was made to avoid that contact. We turn to the arrow at the side of the Gemara, at the left, the right-hand side of the Gemara text. You align the arrow that you're about to see with the arrow above. In the confessional, we saw the Kohen Gadol mentioning Amcho Beis Yisrael, atone for the sins, and he's dealing with this Soyer HaMashlech, the send-away goat right now, and he says that it is to atone for the sins of Beis Yisrael. The Gemara says, V'ilu b'nei Aaron am kedoshecha lo komar. In his confessional, he doesn't make any reference to the sins of the Kohanim. B'nei Aaron, literally the sons of Aaron, the Kohanim are not mentioned here. Mantana, so who is the author of our Mishnah that suggests the Soyer HaMishtalech was an atonement for Klal Yisrael with the exception of the Kohanim having their own atonement through the Par Kohen Moshiach, through the Par of the Kohen Gadol, that is. So who is the author of this idea? We have two approaches then, who the author of our Mishnah might be. Number one, Omer of Yirmiyah, the local Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah is not in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Ibka Rabbi Yehuda. If our Mishnah was in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, Ho'omar, he has been known to say, and we learned this back on Daf Samach Aleph, that Yesh Lahem Kapora Besor Mishtalech, that the Kohanim do achieve atonement through the send-away goat. Abaye Omar Afilu Tamer of Yudah. Abaye says, our Mishnah that mentions Amcho Beis Yisrael can very well be along the lines of Rabbi Yehuda, who said that the Kohanim receive atonement through the Soyer HaMishtaleach. Atu Kohanim Lav Bechlal Amcho Yisrael Ninu. Are you suggesting in your question that the Kohanim are not part of Amcho Yisrael? They certainly are. The Kohanim are a group within the nation of Israel. So when the Kohen Gadol mentions that the Soyer HaMishtaleach should be a vehicle of atonement for the sins of Amcho Beis Yisrael, that very well includes the Kohanim, in line with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Masru Lami Shemolicho, the Mishnah, mentioned that the goat was then given over to the one who would accompany it out to the tzuk, to the cliff outside of Yerushalayim. The practice, of course, is based on psukim in the Torah, and we are making specific reference to Vayikra, Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Chof Aleph. And on the side of the Gemara, we have the quote that's relevant to this section of the Gemara, where the Pasuk says, Vishilach Yad Ish Iti Hamid Bora, and it is sent out with an appointed man to the desert. And now we break down the Pasuk in the following Tanaic source. Tonu Rabbonon, Ish, the Hachshiras Hazar, the word Ish, includes even a Zar, a non-Kohen as well. Iti, that word, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, Shehe Mezumon. The word Iti comes from the word Ace. Ace means time. Here it means someone that is appointed. Iti, Vafilu B'Shabbos, means you will send him out at its time when Yom Kippur comes out, even if it happens to be Shabbos. Iti v'afilu b'tumah. And that means at its appointed time, even if it's a matter of doing it in a state of defilement. These points, afilu b'Shabbos, afilu b'Tuma, will be explained as we go on in the Gemara. We continue now with quotes from this source. Ish lahachshiras azar. The word ish comes to allow even a non-Kohen, and namely that anyone or everyone is eligible for this role of accompanying the animal, the goat, to its destination. The Gemara asks, Pshita, it would seem to be obvious that we really need a posuk for that purpose. This, we're not dealing here with an avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, with a Beis HaMikdash activity. We're not dealing with a sacrificial activity. This send-away goat was not a sacrifice. So what do I need a special scriptural reference to allow a non-Kohen? If you were dealing with a sacrificial act, so that there are, regarding that, the Torah demands only the Kohanim to be engaged in such activities. Not so. Here, this isn't a sacrificial act. So the Gemara answers, why is it necessary for the Torah to specifically give license and permission for a non-Kohen? Mahu detema. Without this, I would have thought, kapora ksiva bei. The Torah uses the word kapora, atonement, in the context of this scapegoat. And since kapora is the term that's used, kapora is associated with sacrificial activity. And I would have thought, because of this word in the context of the Soyer HaMishtaleach, the send-away goat, maybe it is restricted to the Kehanim. Komash Malon, therefore the Torah goes out of its way to say ish, to say not so. Iti, Valfilu B'Shabbos, again a quote we saw at the top line, even on Shabbos, Lamai Hilchasa, what aspect of the goat accompanying needs a special ruling that it can be done even on Shabbos? In other words, there must be some type of potential Shabbos violation that we are telling you go ahead and violate Shabbos, supersede Shabbos in order for this to be accomplished. So that's, what is that? What aspect of this would demand such a permission from the Torah? Omar Rav Sheshes, Lomar, the Gzeres HaKos of Iti, Afilu Shabbos, is telling me, Sheim Hoya Chole, Markivo Al Ksefo, if the sawyer happened to be sickly, the Ish Iti, the appointed person, can carry it on his shoulders. And carrying something on Shabbos involves a what otherwise would be a Shabbos violation. Carrying it from one domain to another, or carrying something for Amos in a Rishus HaRabim. Yet, if the animal is sickly, he will be allowed to do that even on a Yom Kippur that coincides with Shabbos. Keman, this approach that this would otherwise be a Shabbos violation is Delo Kerebi Nosan. Who is the, when the Gemara asks, come on, who is this approach like? Well, it's not like Rabbi Nosson. The Rabbi Nosson, if it were in line with Rabbi Nosson's approach to carrying on Shabbos, Ha'omar, Rabbi Nosson has been known to say, Chai Noise Es Atzmo, a living creature that one carries on Shabbos, you, the carrier, are not said to be in violation of Shabbos, because in carrying something that's alive, the expression literally is translated as the alive thing carries itself. What that means in practical terms might be that since when you are carrying it, it adjusts its weight to accompany for the swaying motion that takes place when you're carrying it, it assists in helping you carry it by this different weight adjustment. Therefore, you are not doing the entire activity by yourself. And in Hilchos Shabbos, there is this idea that an activity that is ordinarily done by one person and two people do it, or two forces do that one activity, so there is exemption. So Rabbi Nosson, in terms of carrying a live creature, would have said that one who carries it on Shabbos from one domain to another is not guilty of a Shabbos violation. So as far as Rabbi Nosson is concerned, you wouldn't need a Gzeiros HaKosov, a special scriptural allowance for doing it on Shabbos, even if Yom Kippur coincides with Shabbos. The Gemara here takes a turnaround and says, Afilu Temo Rabbi Nosson, no, in fact, our Mishnah that says you need a special Shabbos allowance is such even according to Rabbi Nosson, Cholo Shaini. The fact that the animal is sickly and it needs to be carried, in that state is not considered Chai Nose Es Atzmo. In your mind's eye, maybe you can say the animal is sickly and limp, so that the explanation we gave before wouldn't apply to a sickly animal, because it's limp and weak, so it doesn't help you in its being carried. It doesn't adjust itself along the way, and therefore you are the sole carrier of that creature. And as a sole carrier, as a singular performer of this act, that otherwise, without the Gzeiros HaKosov, would have been a Shabbos prohibition. Nevertheless, we are telling you that it's Yom Kippur, and this needs to be done under all circumstances, even if the animal is sickly. Omar Rafram, Zoisoy Meres, from the fact that we have the Gzeiros HaKosov that says, Iti, Aveafilu B'Shabbos, and no mention is made of Yom Kippur, it shows us that it's only because of the Shabbos factor that you would need to have a special allowance. If Yom Kippur, let us say, came out in the middle of the week, so you wouldn't need any special permission. You could go ahead and carry it straight away. This shows us, says Raphram, Eruv v'hoitzah l'Shabbos v'ein Eruv v'hoitzah l'Yom HaKippurim. The term Eruv is brought in here parenthetically. That's a point that Rashi makes. So we want to focus on the word Hoitzah, meaning that the dinim of Hoitzah, Hoitzah is the act of carrying items from one domain to another, or carrying something for Amos in a Rishus HaRabim, in a public thoroughfare. Those halachas are purely Shabbos related, and as far as Yom Kippur itself is concerned, there wouldn't be halachas of Hoitzah. Therefore, we come to the conclusion that the Gzeiros HaKosov, Iti Afilu B'Shabbos, making no mention of Yom Kippur, suggests that Yom Kippur would otherwise not be bound by Hotza'ah restrictions. The term Eruv, as we said, is brought in. By the way, Rashi seems to indicate that Eruv is a reference to Eruv Chatzeros, which is a rabbinic halacha that was established to serve as a fence, a protection against the halacha of Hoitzah. We don't intend to get into any further detail regarding Eruv here. You can see the rest in Rashi. Continuing in the Gemara, Iti ve'afilu betuma, we have a Gzeiros HaKosov that says that it shall be carried out even when there is an issue of tuma involved. Well, what role does tuma have here? What preventive aspect would there have been if there was tuma that I need a special Gzeiros HaKosov, a special scriptural license to say that the sending out of the goat supersedes tuma? So the question is, like we saw before with Shabbos, l'mai hilchasa, for what purpose is this Gzeiros HaKosov necessary? Omar of Sheshes, Lomar, it comes to tell me, Shem Nitmo Mishalcho, if the one who is designated to accompany the animal away became Tome, if the person became Tome, we'll say the Ish Iti had become Tome, Nichnas Tome La'azora U'Mishalcho. He goes into the temple courtyard, which under ordinary circumstances would be strictly forbidden for someone who is Tome. He, nevertheless, the Ishiti, if he's Tomei, goes into the temple courtyard where the Kohen Gadol gave over to him the goat. In other words, the procedure of handover of goat from the Kohen Gadol after his confessional to the Ishit, he took place in the Azorah. So it's necessary then to enter the Azorah. And if the Ishit, the appointed one, happens to be Tomei, so be it. He is allowed to go into the Azorah in a state of Tuma. As we go on in the Gemara, we see a long Tanaic source. A series marking appears, a crown shape that we've used here, to highlight a series of questions. Rashi, on the side of our Gemara, we have the Nosei Mivneh heading, the topic heading, and structural notes, so we've indicated these crown shapes represent Kvutzos Shel She'elos, groups of questions, Shenish'al Rebbe Elazar, that Rebbe Eliezer was presented with, V'lo Ono Lahem Ba'oifen Yashir, and he didn't answer them in a straight fashion. Now, when we say he didn't answer them in a straight fashion, there may be two approaches to this. Rashi seems to take the approach, and this is certainly the way the Marsha understands Rashi, that Rabbi Eliezer simply avoided the questions. We'll see later why. And upon hearing each question, he answers them with something that seems to be totally irrelevant. Again, that seems to be Rashi's approach. The Marsha disagrees with this, and he has an explanation, a point-by-point explanation regarding each question and each answer that Rabbi Eliezer gave, how Rabbi Eliezer was answering their questions, but in a deliberately unclear fashion. And we'll see later why he didn't answer them directly. Either way, according to Rashi, the answers given to the questions are disconnected from the question. According to the Marsha, there is an answer, but it's veiled. We're going to go through this Gemara with the Rashi approach, but it is highly worthwhile to look into the Marsha commentary to see this alternative approach. We continue now in the Gemara. Shalu es Rebbe Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was asked the question, Chola mahu shiar kiveu al ksefo. If the Soyer HaMeshtalech became ill, is it allowed to be carried on one's shoulders? If you want to connect this to the Gemara that we had just before, so it would be a question with regard to Shabbos. If it got sick and it's a Yom Kippur that coincides with Shabbos, or alternatively, you might take the approach that the Dinim of Hoitzah applied to Yom Kippur, unlike the conclusion that Raphram reached before. Either way, the question involves, is it mutter to carry the scapegoat on one's shoulders on Yom Kippur to its destination? Omar Lohem, so Rabbi Eliezer responds, Yochol hu l'arkiv ani v'atem. It can carry me and you. Again, that's a translation, and he seems to be avoiding the basic halachic question posed to him. Rashi says, Yochel arkiv ani v'atem, bori v'chozokoy asor l'arkiv, osi v'eschem olav. The sawyer was strong, and it could have carried me and you on it as well. L'kamon amrinon shaleo chofet sloshiv al shelosam. Later, the Gemara will explain that he didn't want to answer their question, mashaloshama mipi rabo. His practice, Rabbi Eliezer's practice, and this is not the only place in the Shas that you see this. You see this also in Maseches Sukkah, where he is presented with questions, the answer to which he actually knew, but he didn't want to say something that he did not hear from his Rebbe, from his teacher. He was he had great allegiance, we'll say, to a very direct type of transmission of the tradition, teacher to student, teacher to student. He didn't want to step out of line as far as he was concerned, at least, and he being very dedicated to that which he received from his Rabbonim, only that is what he would transmit onwards, and not something otherwise. We continue in the Gemara. Chola mishalcho mahu shishalchenu biad acher. If the ish iti, the appointed person, became ill, can the goat be scented with someone else? Omar Lahem, so Rabbi Elazar answered, Ehei b'shalom ani v'atem. And if you look in the Marsha on this, you'll see a very, very interesting commentary. But as we said, we're going to leave that for each one of you to look into themselves. He says, let us be in peace. Rashi, Ehei b'shalom ani v'atem, klomar, ma lochem lishol alzos, why are you asking me about this? Lo ani v'lo atem nizkak l'shilucho. We don't need this whole ritual. We're living at a time after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, so it's not something that is, you're asking something that is of no direct relevance to us. Another question. Dochvo v'lo meis, mahu shi'erit achra v'miseno. Let us say the goat was pushed off the cliff, namely its destination, and it did not die as it was expected to. Should someone go down there? Should the Ish-Iti go down there, descend the cliff, and kill it? Omar Lohem, Rabbi Elezer responds, Ken yovdu kol oyevecho Hashem. Thusly shall be destroyed all the enemies of Israel. The Chachamim take a specific stand on these questions, and they say, Chola markivo al ksefo. If the animal became ill, it is to be carried out. Chola mishalchoi, if the ish-iti took ill, ishalchenu biyad acher. It shall be sent with someone else. Dochvoi velo meis, yeirid achro v'misen. If it was pushed off the cliff and did not die, so someone else should go down and kill it. So the three questions that Rebbe Elazar was asked, to which he didn't offer a direct response, the Chachomim respond to each one of them with a clear answer. Shalu es Rebbe Elazar, a question was posed to Rebbe Elazar, Ploini mahu le'olam haba. Question regarding so-and-so. Ploni is in the text here, is not clear who they are asking about. Rashi has two pshotim. One says they were asking on someone. Again, not clear who it is. Another pshat is they were asking about Shlomo ben David, King Solomon. Does he have a place in the world to come? As far as why ask about him, that itself is a rather broad topic, but suffice it to say that Shlomo HaMelech was in the eyes of many, and certainly when you learn the Tanakh, you see he did things that were of a questionable nature, to put it lightly, and hence room for asking this question. If you look in the Tosfos, so he has an additional pshat, quoting the Rabbeinu Chananel, and that is they were asking about Avshalom, the son of David HaMelech, who had intimacy with his father's concubines. How does that affect his Olam Haba status? We continue in the Gemara. Omar Lei, so Rabbi Elazar, responds, Lo Shaltuni Elo Alploni. You are not asking me about him, rather, you're asking me about someone else. And Rashi here says the pshat that the name that the Rabbeinu Chananel gave in the first question. So Rashi says that maybe you were asking me about Avshalom. So following Rashi's approach, their original question was, what about Shlomo? And he said back to them, maybe you're really asking me about Avshalom. At this point, we have a note that's found in the Bach. So what we're going to do, we have a bracketed section that we've put in the Gemara. This entire section appears in the Bach in a somewhat clearer, with a clearer flow to it. So we're going to opt to read this section through the Bach, who's found on the side of your Gemara. And then when we get to the end of this bracketed section, so we'll go back into the Gemara. Into the Gemara text. So hopefully everyone is following where we are. We have a little star in the Bach commentary where we continue the reading. Uploni ma'ul olam haba. And they asked him, what about so-and-so with regard to his portion in the world to come? Omar Lahem, Lo Shaltuni Elo Alploni. You didn't ask me about him, rather you asked me about someone else. Mahu, another question, Mahu Lahatsila Kivso Minari. Is it mutter to save the sheep from the lion? We mentioned before that Rashi takes a very, almost a literal approach to this, in the sense that he doesn't offer explanations for the questions. Here, we will just make a very superficial reference to that which you can find in the Marsha, where there is a question, there's a hint over here to the incident involving Bas Sheva and Dovid HaMelech, Bas Sheva being portrayed as the sheep, and that is in fact found in the scriptures themselves, where Nosson HaNovi, the prophet Nosson, presented the Bas Sheva issue to Dovid in a veiled way, referring to a sheep, the Ari, the lion, being Dovid HaMelech. In fact, in the second parak of Maseches Shabbos, there seems to be a reference to Dovid HaMelech also using an Ari, lion analogy. Anyway, we continue in the Bach reading of the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar had been asked, can you save the sheep from the lion? Omar lehem, lo sha'altuni elo al haroya. You were asking me not about the sheep, but about the shepherd. And the shepherd might be, again, if you look in the Marsha, you'll see he makes reference to the Uriah, the husband of the original husband of Bathsheba, and his behavior with regard to Dovid HaMelech, bringing in the question of Mori B'Malchus, where Uriah referred to his master as Yoav, the general in the army, and not the king, which seemed to indicate some type of change of allegiance on the part of Uriah. So, in that context, can he be saved from the hands of Dovid HaMelech? Omar Lohem, Lo Sha'altuni, Reb Lezer says, Lo Sha'alti Elo Al Hakivson. You notice this is a circular type question answer that is taking place, where he says at this point, oh, you are not asking me about the Roeh, the shepherd, literally the shepherd, or he said maybe Uriah, you are asking me about the sheep. Another question. Mamzer, Mahu Lirash. And what is the din regarding a Mamzer? Mamzer is a child who is born in a forbidden from a forbidden parental relationship. A man had intimacy with a woman married to someone else, and she produced a child from that illicit union. That's one example of many of what a mamzer would be. And the question they posed him, does he have a right to inherit his father? And in the Gemara text itself, there are a series of questions regarding a mamzer. So you would go back to the Gemara text, and you see, Mahu liyabeim, Mahu losud es beso, Mahu losud es kivro. And that you can see back in the Gemara text. Keeping one finger though on the Marsha, which we want to go back to the Marsha. The questions involved is a mamzer, if he is a surviving brother from a brother who died leaving no children, does he marry the widow in attempt to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum? Mahu losud es beso. This question has to do with painting or whitewashing the walls of one's house. The Gemara in Bava Basra mentions that because the temple is in ruins, the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, Churban HaBayis, so our practice is not to completely or with a high quality whitewashing of one's house walls. So the Rashi here says, "Ma losud es beso bizman hazeh mi osur mipnei tzar churban habayis." Is it forbidden to have his walls whitewashed as in order to acknowledge or memorialize the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And Mahu Losod Es Kivro, this too is a subject of discussion in the Marsha. What about putting lime, which is a white material, on his grave? The Gemara goes on to say, Lo mipnei shifligon bidvarim. Rabbi Lezer's avoidance isn't because he was trying to give them a runaround. Rather, it's a reflection of his practice of not relating to others something that he did not hear directly from his instructors. Now, we should go back to the Bach, try to find where we left off when we were reading the Bach. The Bach had mentioned losud es kivro, umau losud es kivro, umau losud es beso, lo mitnei shifligon bedvorim, elo, etc. Venira mienai, omar hakosev, betosefta perigimol divomas. And here, the Bach does reveal some of the meaning behind some of these questions. So let's continue reading in the Bach together. Nira de al mamzer shualu, the question was asked regarding a mamzer, ishori losud es beso, is it mutter for him to whitewash the walls of his house, deshemo yeshlo lisabel al sheposel hu lovo bakol. This is a pshat that's different than the Rashi pshat. Rashi tied this into the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Here, it's a question concerning his illegitimacy, his prohibition of entering the nation of Israel. He, a mamzer, is not allowed to marry a Jewish girl from the common ranks of the Jewish people. Here we're not going to get into details of who a mamzer is allowed to marry, but a basic regular Jewess is something forbidden for a mamzer to marry, and likewise a girl that's a mamzeress. She cannot marry into the rank and file of the Jewish people. As a result of this, the concept of mourning, of bemoaning and mourning his status, maybe that should be reflected by a restriction imposed on the mamzer from whitewashing the walls of his house. The Alzeh Heshiv, regarding this, Rabbi Lezer says, Ma'u losud es kivro. What about applying lime to his grave? The kevan shu puzzle, since he is unfit, he is disqualified, he's illegitimate. Ein oisin loy kavod bemoso. We don't bestow any honor upon him upon his death. Kadeshe eker shazaro puzzle, so that it should be obvious that his offspring, that this person, who, if he left any descendants, are all illegitimate, and which is the rule of the Torah, that a mamzer is someone whose status of illegitimacy is perpetuated through his descendants. V'lo mayri hocha b'shvicha sid al hakever l'shem tzion. The Bach adds that we're not talking here about the practice of pouring lime over a grave l'shem tzion in order to demark it so as to enable Kohanim to avoid defilement. So there had been, the Gemara mentions in Moed Katan, that lime was poured over graves so as to make it clear that here someone is buried. It could very well be, given that they didn't have head markers, as is quite common in cemeteries, but rather unrecognizable grave on the ground, so lime would be poured to serve as a demarcation. All that the same, this Gemara is not referring to that form of lime application, but rather a form of whitewashing graves, which would have been a sign of honor. So he, the mamzer, does not deserve that. As he says, as the Bach goes on to say, this is not a reference to the whitewashing or the lime application l'shem tzion k'diso resh perik mashkin, the beginning of perik mashkin in Moed Katan, ela tichas sid shahayu oisin l'kvorim l'shem kavod. but rather it was a coating of a grave with sid, this lime material, as a sign of honor. Upirish Rashi kan hu tamua. The Bach says that Rashi's explanation in this Gemara is something that raises wonderment. Let us turn back now to the Gemara text. We're picking up now with the next crown shape. Shalo isho hachomes Reb Elezer. A wise woman posed a question to Reb Elezer. Me'achar shemaiso egel shovin. In the Exodus from Mitzrayim, there was the unfortunate incident of the construction of the golden calf and its subsequent worship. Many people had violated the halacha in worshiping it. Many different forms of activity were done, and yet we find that they all fall under the general heading, if you will, of, we'll say, maybe a form of idolatry. So Me'achar shemaisa egel shoven, Rashi says, avodos of shavus li'isur. All of their different activities, though, are all equal with regard to their prohibition. Why then, mipneima ein misasun shoven? Why is it that when you look in the psukim of the Torah, the death that was meted out to the different to different people was in fact not the same, wasn't a uniform form of capital punishment? Rashi elaborates here, and if you see in the Rashi, Shemaisa Gilshovin Avodos of Shavos Leiser Mipnei Ma'in Misosin Shavos Shoyubo Sholosh Mises, there were three different kinds of death that the Torah reveals. Sayef is death at the hands of the sword. Simu Ish Harbo, the Pasuk mentions that after Moshe Rabbeinu discovered the violation of the golden calf, so he says, we're speaking to the tribe of Levi, and he says, each one gird yourselves with the sword and kill those who worshipped the Egel Hazov. We also find Misas Magefa, death at the hands of a plague. The Pasuk says, Vayigoyf Hashem Es Ha'om. We find Misas Hedroiken, death as a result of a disease known as Hedroiken. Dichti Vayizer Al Pnei Hamayim, Ramir Seches Avodah Zorah, L'Neskavim Moshe, L'Voidkon Kesoytis, B'Litzvoiz Beten. The death of a Sota is through a form of death associated with Hedroiken, that type of disease, without getting into any details. Nevertheless, there is a reference in the Psukim to that form of death as well. So you see three different forms of death for what would appear to be a singular violation of idolatry. That was the question that this wise woman posed to Reb Elezer. Why do we find different deaths when Maisa Egel Shoven, when there was uniform violation of Egel Hazov? Omar Law, Reb Elezer says back, Ein chochma l'isha elo bepelech. The wisdom of a woman is in her spinning of wool. V'cheinu Omer v'chol isha chochma slev biodeo tavu. This pasuk is a reference to a high level of skill that apparently women had at the time of the construction of the Mishkan. They were able to spin the wool for the production of fabrics and the use of them in the Mishkan, which demanded some type of high level intelligence and skill. So Reb Elezer is mentioning that the wisdom of women is found in the pelech, that's the device used in spinning of wool. Here the Gemara itself refers to the incident involving the Egel and gives direct explanations why the different deaths. Itmar Rav v'Levi. Chad Omar, one says, Zibeach v'kiter b'sayef, Gibeif v'nishek b'misa, Somach b'libo b'hedroiken. The three different forms of death that we saw in Rashi are explained as, if Zibeach v'kiter, number one, was the slaughtering and burning of sacrifices to the Egel Azov, there death was through Sayef, at the death of the sword. They were killed by what's called Misas Cherev, or Sayef. Sayef is a sword. Kipei v'nifshech has to do with their hugging and kissing the Egel Azov, so they died at Bemisa, the plague, and Somach Beliboy, those who were happy, Belevovo, Somach Belevovo, that were happy with the incident, they suffered Hedroiken. V'chad Omar, the other opinion, we had two names, Rav and Levi, so one said what we just learned, and the other says, Edim v'hasra b'sayef. If there were witnesses who issued a warning to the violator, and they nevertheless violated in this deliberate fashion, they were killed b'sayef. In order to carry out a court-oriented or court-based death penalty, the court does not act unless there is, in addition to witnesses, they also served a warning. Edim below hasra, if there were witnesses, but there was no hasra, there was no warning before the act, so there, based in, cannot act in a proactive fashion, so b'misa, they died at the hands of a plague. Lo edim below hasra, if there were no witnesses and there was no warning, behadroiken, they suffered the hadroiken disease, which seems to have led to their death. Omar of Yehuda, Shifto Shalevi, Lo Ovad Avodas Kechavim. Rav Yehuda says that the tribe of Levi was not involved in idolatry. The idolatry in the context of the golden calf. Shneamar Vayamo Yiv Moshe B'Shar Amachne. The Pasuk goes on to say, now here you can see at the under the Gemara text there's a bays where the quotation continues, Vayomer Mi Lashem Eli Vayosvo Alov Kol B'nei Levi. Upon seeing the disaster of the Egel Azov, Moshe Rabbeinu says, who is loyal to the Almighty, and he who is loyal to the Almighty, come to me. And they're gathered around Moshe, all of the tribe of Levi. So as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, he looks at the Pasuk, and he comes to the conclusion that B'nai Levi were not in violation of the Egel Azov. Yosef Ravina v'komer loho shmaitza. We're continuing the Gemara. You can see the second wide line. Ravina said over this teaching, Esfei b'nei Rav Papa bar Abba l'Ravina. The sons of Rav Papa asked Ravina. There is a posuk that says, Ulelevi omar, etc. Ha'omer la'aviv u'le'imo lo ro'isiv. This is a pasuk from the Maaseh Egel, and the pasuk indicates that when Moshe Rabbeinu called out to all the loyal ones, so there were people from the tribe of Levi that gathered with him, and they showed no mercy on anyone who violated, including their own next of kin, their own near close relatives. Where the pasuk indicates they didn't see their father nor their mother. In other words, they had no compassion on anybody. But the pasuk indicates father of a Levi, he is also a Levi. All next of kin of a Levi are Levium. So you see that amongst the tribe of Levi, there were Levies that were in violation as well. You had Levi killing Levi. The Gemara answers, not so. The term Oviv in the Pasuk that we just read equals Avi Imoi Misrael. It's a reference to, not literally his own father, but his mother's father. His mother's father might have been from Yisrael. In other words, you have a Levi who married the daughter of a non-Levi. So, who was being killed in this Pasuk is, the Levi would have ended up killing his maternal grandfather who violated the Egel Azov. Achiv, the reference to Achiv in that Pasuk, equals Aviv, Achiv Me'imoi Mi'Yisrael. A man has a brother, but through a common mother, two different fathers. So you have a lady that was married on the one hand to a Levi, so that child is a Levi, and that same woman was also married on a different occasion to a non-Levi producing Israel. So the Levi ended up killing his brother, but a brother through a common mother, and that fellow being a non-Levi. Bonov, which is also referred to in the Pasuk. Bnei Bito Miyisrael. It's a reference to his grandsons. Well, Levi's grandsons were the Levi's daughter married a non-Levi, producing grandchildren that were non-Leviim. But as far as someone who was a purebred Levi, or I should say a licensed Levi, a formal Levi, someone who carried the Levi label on him, none of them were in violation of the Egel Hazav. The Kevish Osulo, Vechule Mipnei Habavlayim, we said, Shehoyu Mitalshin Besaro. A special ramp was made in order for the scapegoat and the one accompanying it to exit the Azora, in order to avoid the Bavloyim, the Babylonians, who otherwise have this practice of ripping out the hair of the goat. Omar Rabo Bar Barchana Lo Bavloyim Hoyu. Truth is, they were not Jews from Babylonia that were doing that. Elo Alexandrayim Hoyu. They were Jews from Alexandria that used to do that. Umitok Shisainim as Bavloyim Hoyu Kurin Oysan Al Shmon. Because there was enmity between the residents of Israel and the Jews that lived in Babylonia, so any wayward behavior was associated with Babylonians, even though in this particular case it wasn't Babylonians who were guilty of this negative practice. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer lo bavloyim hoyu alexandrim hoyu. Rabbi Yehuda, in this Tanaic source, says the same thing, that they were not Babylonians, they were really Alexandrians. Omar lo Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, upon hearing Rabbi Yehuda saying this, so he says, Tanuach daitcha shinachtas daiti. You should have comfort because you enabled me to feel comfort. It's pointed out that Rabbi Yossi comes from a family whose origins were in Babylonia, and he was previously upset with his ancestors being associated with this kind of wayward behavior, but upon hearing that they really weren't the practitioners of this, he felt comforted. Tul Vitzei Tono, the Brisa elaborates on the Mishnah that said, take him and get out. Ma, they were, what were they saying when they were pulling out its hair and trying to rush him out of the Beis HaMikdash? Ma shoi safira dein v'chovi dora sagin. What are you doing delaying? Shohi is to delay. Sfira is the goat. This goat. What are you hanging around with this goat for while the sins of Israel, that's the chovi dora, the sins of the generation sagin, are very great. So they were very interested in rushing him out of there as quickly as possible. We continue with the Mishnah. Miyakire Yerushalayim hoyu malavin oisei ad sukkah harishona. Yakire Yerushalayim are the choshuv, the important citizens of Jerusalem. They practiced accompanying the ishiti with the goat out to ad sukkah harishona until the first hut. There were huts that were set up en route to the cliff from which the Sawyer was pushed off. So from Jerusalem to the first hut located outside Yerushalayim, the Choshuva citizenry, the important citizenry of Jerusalem, would accompany the Ish Iti till that first hut. Eser Sukkos Yerushalayim v'ad Suk. There were 10 huts set up from Jerusalem till the Suk, till the cliff. And we're going to see later in the Gemara there are different opinions on this topic of numbers, but this Mishnah is telling us there were 10 huts from Yerushalayim lining the route from Yerushalayim to the cliff. We continue at the top of Samach Zayin Omed Aleph, Tishim Ris. The total distance was 90 Ris. Ris is a measure of distance. Shivo Emechse Lechol Mil Ich. A meal. A meal is a distance of 2,000 amos, approximately a kilometer. So each meal contained 7.5 ris. So if you want to know how many mil there were, you would take the number 90, and we know that that 90 ris, each ris represented, each mil represented 7.5 ris. So you have 90 ris divided by 7.5. That gives you 12 mil. There'll be 12 kilometers from the Beis Hamikdash till the cliff. Al kol sukkah v'sukkah oimrim lo, at each hut, when this ish iti would arrive, so there were people that inhabited these huts from before Yom Kippur. So you had the residents of these huts telling the ish iti as he arrived at each one of them, harei mozon v'harei mayim. They'd say, yeah, you know, we've got food here and we've got water. Of course, it's Yom Kippur. Everyone is required to fast. And yet, they announced this. And we'll see later why they told him that we've got food and drink over here. He was accompanied from booth to booth, from hut to hut. Chutz me'achron shebohen, with the exception of the last one, she'eno magia imo latzuk. No one would accompany him from the last hut till the cliff. In fact, if you make the necessary calculations, and you can see this, the calculations are in the Rashi, itself, being that we're dealing with a distance of 12 mil and sukkahs and booths. There were 10 booths. The gap between each sukkah was one mil. So if you have 10 booths, there are 9 gaps between each booth. So the distance from sukkah to sukkah, if you count the total distance, you would account for 9 of the 12 mil. The first mil was from Jerusalem to the sukkah. And we have to mention that when it comes to laws of walking outside of a settled area on Shabbos, one is limited to a distance of 2,000 amos. 2,000 amos is one mil. So if a person was going to walk away from where he was, if he's going to want to be able to get back, he can't venture more than one mil or more than 2,000 amos from his location. So from Jerusalem to the first hut, there was one mil. So those who accompanied him to that first hut, they could go back home to Yerushalayim. And likewise from hut to hut. So going from Yerushalayim till the end of all of the 10 huts, that would account for 10 mil. But there are two more. Didn't we say there were 12 mil total? So from the last hut to the cliff, there was a balance left of 2 mil. 2 mil is beyond the Torah of Shabbos. It's beyond the distance a person is allowed to walk. Of course, other than the Ish Iti, supersedes these halachas. But as far as the hut residents were concerned, we said in the Mishnah just now that he was being accompanied from hut to hut, or from place to place, with the exception of the last hut dwellers that were not able to reach the tzuk. They were not able to reach the cliff. As we said a moment ago, the distance between the last hut and the cliff was 2,000 amos. By the way, we have a little chart on the side of the Gemara that illustrates that which we are saying right now. The chart is designed to illustrate Shitas Rebbe Meir that will appear in the Gemara. As we said, there are several Shitos on this. Our Mishnah represents Rebbe Meir's approach, and as far as the last mile, so to speak, it's not a mile, it's 2 kilometers, that last distance, so he had to walk it alone, almost all. He had to walk half of that last distance alone. The Mishnah mentions, as we just read, reading again the third line from the top, the last two words, Chutz me'achron sheben, with the exception of the last hut, she'enu magia imo letzuk. They didn't reach the tzuk with him. They were able to walk 2,000 amos, one of the 2 meals that were left. They walked one meal with him, leaving him 1 kilometer to walk on his own. And what happened at that point, Ela oimed me'rochayk v'royas ma'isa, whoever was accompanying him from the last hut would stand at a distance, and the distance is 1 meal away from the cliff, and they would see what he is doing. Ma hoya oisa, what did he do? What did the ish iti, the accompanying man, do with the goat when he reached the cliff? Chaylek lashon shel zahiris, there was a strip of crimson wool was dyed red. That's the Lashon Shel Zoharis. And he took this strip and divided it into half. Chetzio Koshur Besela, the Chetzio Koshur Bein Shnei Karnov. One half of the strip he tied to a rock that was by the edge of the cliff, and the other half he tied to the horns of the goat. V'dochvo l'achorov, and he shoved the goat off. L'achorov means shoved it backwards off the cliff. V'hu misgalgul v'yored, it would roll down. V'lohoya magia l'chatzihar, it didn't reach even halfway down. Ad shinase evorim, until it became dismembered by the impact and the sharp rock protrusions or whatever was there at this cliff. It served to rip it into shreds, into limbs. And that was its fate. Bo v'yoshav lo itachas suko achroino ad shetechshach. The ish-iti then returned to the last hut until the end of Yom Kippur, until darkness. U'meimasai metame begodim. Now we know that that there is tumas begodim. There's a form of clothing impurity that sets upon the ish-iti, the meshaleach. So at what point did clothing impurity set upon him? So here there are two opinions. One, Mishiyotzu Chutz L'Choymas Yerushalayim. One opinion says that upon his leaving the wall of Jerusalem, Rav Shimon Omer Mishas D'Chiyosu Latzuk, only from the time it was pushed off the cliff. We go on in the Gemara briefly, even though we've gone over our Dafyomi limit, but nevertheless, this next source is directly related to the issue of the huts that we were just talking about, so we'll just continue with this. Tanu Rabbanan, Eser Sukos, Ushneim Osor Milin Hoyu. This is the approach we already saw in the Mishnah. We explained it, 10 huts along the way, a total of 12 meal. Divrei Rebbe Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tisha Sukos, the Asora Milin. Rabbi Yehuda has a different approach. He says that there were 9 sukkos that lined the way, and there was a total of only 10 mil from Yerushalayim to the cliff. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chomesh sukkos, the Asora Milin Hoyu. There were 5 booths lining the way, and there was a total of 10 mil distance. Now you'll ask, well then, how can he be accompanied if the purpose of these huts is to offer accompaniment for the Ish-Iti on his journey? How could 5 booths accommodate that when you're dealing with a distance of 10 mil? You would end up having 2 mil between each booth. So the answer to that is v'kulon ayadei eruv. Eruv is a reference here to eruv tchumen, which is a halacha that enables a person to extend his tchum, his 2,000 amo walking distance, by an additional maximum 2,000 amos in a specific direction, by placing food at the 2,000 amma mark from wherever you are located. So that if between 2 booths there was 4,000 ammas, 4,000 ammas is 2 mil, the residents, or some of the residents of a booth, would place some food 1 mil away from their booth, enabling them to go an additional meal. So he would have accompaniment from one booth to the next. Omar Rebbe Yossi, Soch li Elozer bini. Rabbi Yossi says that my son told me. Rashi adds that the word soch li, literally sicha, is a conversation, but Rashi says beloshen schok al dvorai. He responded to me in an offhanded way, in a laughing fashion, in maybe a derisive fashion. He says, the son of Rabbi Yossi said to his father, if you're going to introduce Eruv into the equation, well, im al yadei Eruv, if Eruv is being used, yocholni lasos afilu shtei sukos v'asora milin. I could set it up where you would have only 2 booths along the 10-meal route. And Rashi explains how if by using an Eruv, you're enabling a distance of 4,000 amos to be covered, so, and you have a distance of 10 mil to be covered, well, two booths, that will already account for a distance of 8,000 mil. And the balance of 2 mil left to complete 10 mil, so you've got to have 1 mil to the next, to the first sukkah, and then 1 mil from the last sukkah to the cliff, and you've accomplished everything you need by way of providing accompaniment for the ish iti. Keman az lahodasanya. We have a source that has no name, and we want to know according to whom. We have so far seen Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. According to whom would the following source comply? It says, Chutz me'achron shebohen, shelo yigia imo letzuk, ela oime me'rochot v'roes ma'isov. Now that, in fact, is a quote from our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, there was no name. So, it's interesting that in the Gemara, it's presented as a brisa. But as I said, we saw this on the third line from the top of the Mishnah, we saw this same lashon. So it's interesting that the Gemara refers to this as desanya, but it would probably be a question that we could pose as far as the Mishnah is concerned as well. Who is the author of the Mishnah? Answer, Keman Kerebi Meir. This would work out only according to Rebbe Meir's cheshbonus. According to his calculations, this last phase be appropriate, because according to his calculations, and we have our chart on the side to illustrate this, from Yerushalayim till the 10th booth, that accounted for 10 mil. The last 2 mil of the 12 mil total, that's of course according to Rebbe Meir, who said there were 12 mil, that could not be covered by the inhabitants of the sukkah, being that a person is limited on Shabbos and Kippur to traveling only 1 mil. So the last 2 mil, he would be accompanied maybe for one of the 2 mil, but the very last meal he would be left on his own. No one would go with him to there, but rather whoever was with him till that last meal would stand there and see what he is doing. So we asked, according to whom is that? Keman Kerebi Meir. This conforms to Rebbe Meir's approach, because as we said, according to Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Yossi, you would not, the last meal, in fact, he could have had accompaniment for that. Before we conclude, we want to remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.